Calling All Cars, a copyrighted program created by Rio Grande.
Seattle Police calling all cars. Attention all cars. Broadcast 293 regarding a suspicious man. Be on the lookout for Edmund Romaine, alias Jimmy the Flea. This man is suspected of forging payroll checks. That's all. Rosenquist.
One gallon of gasoline may look like any other and occupy the same amount of space in your gas tank, but the real test of a motor fuel is what it will do. How will it make your motor perform? Some gasolines are better than others. They're just made better, that's all. And there is one gasoline that plays second fiddle to none of them. I'm referring, of course, to the new all-purpose Rio Grande Cracked. This radically new motor fuel is made better. We put more vital ingredients into all-purpose Rio Grande Cracked. Twice as many, in fact, as the three elements found in most ordinary gasolines. And more than that, friends, this double portion of power-producing ingredients are so perfectly blended with hairline precision that this revolutionary fuel multiplies the performance of every automobile it powers in many ways. These include not only the top speed and power of which your car is capable, but unprecedented smoothness and real money-saving mileage. Police cars, ambulances, fire engines, and other emergency equipment were the first proving ground for this great new motor fuel. When it answered every demand, met every purpose beyond their fondest expectations, we gave it to you. Drive into your neighborhood red and white Rio Grande station and take aboard a tank full of the new all-purpose Cracked, the most highly recommended public-serving gasoline sold in the West. The story we are to hear tonight has been taken in the main from confidential files of the Office of Chief of Police William N. Sears of Seattle, Washington. We have therefore asked Chief Sears to open our program.
It is a pleasure to be the guest of a program that, in my opinion, is doing so much toward educating the average citizen regarding the work done by law enforcement agencies in protecting him against lawless elements. I shall never cease to wonder at the stupidity of the criminal in imagining that he can get away with crime. It is true that crime costs a staggering amount in the United States every year. But the fact remains that eventually the criminal loses. His crime is never profitable to anyone, and his continued struggle against the law inevitably results in his learning the fact that crime of any sort cannot pay. How this lesson was brought home to the criminals in tonight's story, we shall see as the program progresses.
In the prison printing shop at Salem, Oregon, two convicts stand side by side operating the presses. It is early in the year of 1935.
Well, I'm glad that batch is done.
Why?
Why not?
You'll only have another batch to print tomorrow.
So what? I'll be glad when that's done, too.
Being glad about things in this place will only make you bitter, my boy.
Ah, you old stir bums, give me a pain.
Old? 40 ain't old.
Yeah, bet you spent most of them years in stir, I can tell.
Only because you've been told. And I haven't let them get me.
And this one's not getting me.
It will if you don't change your ways.
Will you listen to what's talking? You're a sweet one to put on a reform act.
Oh, don't get me wrong, my boy. I merely meant that you must change your mental attitude while paying your debt to society.
Yeah, what good'll it do me?
And it'll help you when you get out. You'll be in the proper frame of mind to take your living where you don't find it.
I notice you always bounce right back.
Quite true. But not without profit.
Profit? You mean you got a roll?
Not exactly. My profit has been an experience. Each time I make some blunder and blame no one but myself.
So what did it get you besides a stretch?
The knowledge that I shall perfect my technique. And it's worth all my years of striped contemplation.
You know, sometimes I think you're screwed.
Yeah.
But this place don't get you down, so maybe you got something.
Of course I have. Perseverance is what counts in any line. I'll never forget the time I was convicted in Vancouver. It was in 1916, and I think it was for forgery. Oh, yes, of course it was. Because I was interviewed personally by the American Bankers Association. I said to them, gentlemen, I said, I have always been a crook, and I always expect to be a crook.
You didn't.
Yeah, it did. I don't mind telling you, they blew their tops.
Boy, that was good.
And then there was the time in London when I got a year for burglary, dear old London. I was with the Canadian Army, so I got 9 years off for patriotism. Hey, if the war hadn't been over, I'd have had a suspended sentence in the trenches.
Say, you've really been all over, haven't you?
Yeah, that's how I got my nickname, Jimmy the Flea.
Jimmy the Flea?
Yeah, that's it. Not at all in keeping with my dignity, but quite descriptive. I was in Detective Tennant's office in Seattle one time, and Charlie said to me...
Well, of course, it's no use to tell you, Jimmy, that you've got a very bad record.
Yeah, no, Chief. Hurts you to tell me about it more than it hurts me.
All right, go ahead and laugh at me. You haven't learned anything since the time you were 10 years old.
Oh, don't tell me. I was sent to the state training school in Chehalis, Washington.
For burglary.
Yeah, nasty thing, burglary.
You're a likable fellow, Jimmy.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get tough with you.
The same to you, Chief. And you haven't got anything on me.
Well, no. Because you do something, and when we go to put the finger on you, you've hopped and are someplace else. You're just like a flea.
Oh, that's a harsh name, Chief.
Yes. Jimmy the Flea.
Yeah.
But someday we're going to put the finger on you, and when we do, you're going to be smashed. Just like a flea. I don't suppose you'll listen.
Oh, that name stuck to me ever since.
Well, it looks like you ain't been so spry with your jumping lately.
Yeah, they haven't kept their finger on me long, and they'll never put it on when I get out this time.
Yeah.
I perfected my technique. Hey, what do you suppose I asked to be put in this printing shop for?
You tell me.
Very simple. I made blunders in forgery in the past, but when I get out of here this time, I'll know all about printing, ink, and grades of paper.
It's pretty smart at that.
Yes, sir. I've learned all the angles, and they'll never get me this time.
When do you get out, Jimmy?
On March the 2nd, 1935, Jimmy the Flea will start hopping again.
In October 1937, Frank Borneman, head of the police check detail in Seattle, entered a tavern on 2nd Avenue. With him were detectives Herman Foy and Seth Taylor.
What'll it be, gents?
We're from headquarters, check detail. Are you the man that had some paper hung on him Saturday?
Oh, so you guys finally decided to come around.
Listen,
eh?
Mister, we had a couple dozen other places to check up on. And I'd advise you to be more cooperative than the rest of them.
Can you give us any information or can't you? Yeah. This guy comes in Saturday and gives me a rubber check. So the management wants some pinch.
Well, the police department understands how the management feels.
And we'd like to do something about it.
All we want is a little description of the guy.
If it's not asking too much.
I told you all I can. He buys a beer and gives me a bum check. So management don't like it.
I can understand that.
That was Saturday. The check didn't bounce until Tuesday. I've had hundreds of guys in here since then.
Yeah, but they all didn't cash checks.
Say, you know, he looked like a businessman.
You mean he told you he was a businessman?
Come to think of it, he had a briefcase.
What? A briefcase?
Yeah.
Oh, then he must be a businessman.
Yeah, I remember, because on account he laid it on the counter and got beer on it.
Not beer.
It's too bad somebody didn't throw beer in his face, and you might remember what he looked like.
Several days later, Inspector Borneman assembled all the known facts concerning the phantom forger. Still working with him were Detectives Foy and Taylor.
I hope you boys know what we're up against.
I think so.
Yeah. After hanging $400 worth of paper in the city over the weekend, we know that he wears good clothes, has gray hair, and wears glasses.
And last but not least, he has a briefcase.
These checks are a work of art. The printing's perfectly balanced, and it's on regulation check paper.
Yeah, even the bank serial number's on it in the right place.
You know, only a printer with expert training could do that kind of work.
Sure, even the banks don't know they're phony until they're sent back to the firms they're drawn on.
Well, we've contacted every printing shop and paper plant in the city. No lead there.
I didn't expect any. Apparently, this fellow comes into a city in the middle of the week and gets familiar with it. On Saturday, he sends the phony paper floating around, and it doesn't get to the bank until Monday at least.
And then it's Tuesday, Wednesday, or even Thursday before it gets back to the firm and is checked on the books.
And by that time, the guy's hundreds of miles away.
Exactly. I got in touch with other cities, and a guy that works like him is wanted from Dallas, Texas, to Ottawa, Canada. Well, in Tacoma, he had checks printed on the Better Business Bureau.
Oh, the guy's crazy.
Yeah, like a fox. Who was going to suspect him in Olympia? When he had checks printed on the American Red Cross. We're in Kelso on the Chamber of Commerce.
Well, I'll
now, look. I'm going to ask every city that he's been in to send us the dates that he visited them.
I get you. We can trace the route he takes and get an idea when he's liable to show up here again.
That's the idea. In the meantime, you two keep circulating among the merchants. When I get all the reports, we'll get together.
Uh-huh.
Maybe in that way, we'll be able to figure where he's going to jump next.